You're listening to the Flasco Oncopod, brought to you by the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology, the voice of oncology in Florida.
Hi, everyone. My name is Chris Kogel. I'm a medical oncologist at the University of Florida.
Hi there, and I'm Neil Iyengar, a medical oncologist at the Winship Cancer Institute of Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia.
Great. So, Neil, let's begin with a case. Let's start with a patient that I think we've all cared for, and you're particularly an expert at. So let's say a 48-year-old premenopausal woman diagnosed with stage 2 invasive ductal carcinoma. The tumor was ER positive, PR positive, and HER2 negative. She underwent a lumpectomy with sentinel lymph node biopsy, followed by adjuvant dose-dense ACT chemotherapy and whole breast radiation. She's now about 6 weeks post-radiation, and she's transitioned to anastrozole after receiving ovarian suppression with leuprolide. Her scans are clear, but she's struggling. And she tells you on a return clinic visit, Neil, to your clinic, that she's got persistent fatigue, joint stiffness, weight gain around the midsection, and intermittent neuropathy from the prior paclitaxel. So Neil, when you see someone like this in your clinic, what stands out to you and what's kind of driving that struggle to complement treatment?
Well, so first, you know, I think this is an excellent case to really illustrate issues that I think we all face when treating our patients in clinic, essentially on a daily basis. And this is, you know, one of the biggest gaps that we face are that our patients are deconditioned and they're dealing with issues like metabolic dysfunction and sarcopenia. Certainly the adverse effects of cancer therapy, arthralgia or joint stiffness, fatigue, and all of this contributes to poor quality of life, poor drug tolerance, and can really impair adherence. And these are major issues because, of course, in this particular case, this patient is dealing with a high-risk breast cancer, and she, of course, received multimodality therapy. And really, I would argue the most important part of her treatment is that long-term endocrine therapy. This is also the kind of patient in whom we would probably escalate her adjuvant endocrine therapy and add a CDK4/6 inhibitor, which would probably accentuate some of these adverse effects that she's experiencing. And so this is a major, the tolerance is a major issue because, of course, this impacts adherence, and the treatments that we prescribe to extend survival may not be fully realized in terms of their potential and the ability to extend survival, because if patients can't adhere, then of course the therapy is not effective. This is where structured lifestyle therapy comes into play. We know from a large and growing body of evidence that lifestyle therapy helps to maintain muscle mass, improve energy levels, reduce arthralgias, and generally improve quality of life so that patients can complete their long-term endocrine therapy. As we all know, we're prescribing adjuvant endocrine therapy for at least 5 years now. And in a high-risk patient like this, we're probably extending endocrine therapy to 7 to 10 years. And so for hormone receptor-positive breast cancer, getting patients through their long-term therapy can really mean the difference between recurrence and cure. And that's where lifestyle therapy becomes critical.
Yeah. And you mentioned that the growing body of evidence. I think one to highlight, a landmark trial that was published in New England Journal of Medicine on July 3rd, 2025, was a study called Challenge. And they looked at colon cancer patients, colon health and lifelong exercise change. That was it was made into the acronym Challenge. It was a phase 3 study, randomized, multi-center, primarily in Canada and Australia. It was 55 centers in 6 countries. And in this landmark trial, they had 889 patients with resected stage 3 or high-risk stage 2 colon cancer. that had completed adjuvant chemotherapy, and within 2 to 6 months, recruited them into a structured exercise program or to a pamphlet that many of our clinics just hand out. The goal, I thought it was interesting that the goal was to increase the to a greater than 10 metabolic equivalent task hours. And as a medical oncologist, I had no idea what a met hour was, but it's essentially a quantitative way of measuring the amount of brisk walking or cycling or swimming that someone does. And so, for example, 10 met hours per week is about 2.5 hours of brisk walking. So let's say 3 times a week for about an hour doing some brisk walking. That was what this trial wanted to layer on to these patients with a history of colon cancer and treatment. Again, the control group was people that just got health education materials promoting physical activity and nutrition. The primary endpoint of the trial was a disease-free survival. Secondary endpoint was overall survival and quality of life. It was interesting, the results. When you look at who was recruited to the trial, the median age was 61 years of old. 51% were women. 90% had stage 3 colon cancer, and 61% had received FOLFOX treatment as their adjuvant therapy. The group of patients at baseline were already doing 10 met hours per week. So they were already doing brisk walking. But what the trial wanted to do was to add an additional 10 met hours to their weekly regimen. The trial groups were well balanced. And when it comes to treatment adherence, there was very high adherence to the mandatory behavioral support program. It was about 83%. There was also a mandatory exercise program in the first 6 months, which had an 80% adherence. But in the second 6 months, the exercise sessions were not mandatory. It was just recommended. However, there was still a 68% adherence. So there was a drop-off, but there was a continued adherence. And in the last 2 years of the trial, even though the exercise wasn't mandated, it was recommended for supervision, 44% of the patients still showed up for the supervised education session. The median follow-up was about 8 years. And on those two, the two survival measures, what it showed was that the exercise group achieved a significant benefit over the health education group. So the annual incidence of recurrence, new primary cancer, and death was 3.7% in the exercise group, but it was 5.4% in the health education group. So it was better disease-free survival in the exercise group. And in the 5-year disease-free survival, which us oncologists like to look at because, either at that time point, it's either raining or it's not raining. There was an 80% disease-free survival in the exercise group at 5 years, and there was a 73.9% disease-free survival in the health education group. So again, better when you were actually doing the structured exercise. And surprisingly, there was an overall survival benefit. At 8 years, there was a 90% overall survival in the exercise group and an 83% survival in just the group that got pamphlets. So again, a structured exercise better. And then they used a validated self-reported instrument, the SF-36 survey, which showed better quality of life across all time points out to 3 years. Adverse events, I think what you'd expect, some muscle strain, musculoskeletal issues. It was slightly higher in the exercise group compared to the pamphlet, the edu health education group. So, Neil, as a practicing oncologist, as a thought leader in this space of breast oncology and recovery from both the treatment and disease, what are your conclusions when you looked at this challenge trial?
Well, so first, thanks for that excellent summary, Chris. I mean, this was a complex trial. It was a 3-year structured exercise intervention. And I think your breakdown of the metabolic equivalence was really helpful and informative because, you know, I think that when we look at exercise guidelines, they're typically phrased in terms of minutes per week and intensity of exercise. And, you know, I, as a researcher in the exercise space, we do use metabolic equivalents. But as a practicing oncologist, when I shift my hats and think, what am I going to tell my patients? This is not a language that is patient friendly if I tell my patient, go, you know, exercise 10 metabolic equivalent hours per week. So, you know, I think that's a really important breakdown. And that kind of leads me to what did we learn from this trial? Of course, the question that you posed, and there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, this is an incredibly important trial. This is the first trial to show what we've all suspected and hypothesized, and that is that you can lower the risk for cancer recurrence and extend survival with an exercise intervention. And this was very significant in terms of if you look at that hazard ratio of 0.72, we've seen new cancer drugs be approved by the FDA based on data like this. This would be considered a home run if this was a drug trial. And so I think that's really the first conclusion that we have to emphasize here is that the survival benefit in patients with colon cancer now associated with exercise now has level one evidence in terms of the anti-cancer effects of exercise. The trial also re-emphasized what we know from prior trials in terms of improvements in quality of life and patient-reported outcomes. We've seen several exercise trials that are primarily designed to show improvements of quality of life. This reconfirmed that improvement. And ultimately, I think the other piece that we've learned here is that adherence to an exercise intervention can be good if there's a lot of support, but without appropriate support, so that adherence can diminish. And this is a major barrier in terms of how we implement a trial like this, is how do we provide a program like this to our patients, and how do we help support them to be able to adhere to what I would argue is a life-saving intervention, structured exercise. This trial took many years to complete. And so even in the context of a clinical trial, this intervention was a challenge to implement and to carry out. But despite those challenges, the results are really impressive and really emphasize that we need to be including exercise as part of the cancer treatment plan. And there are a lot of, this was a trial in colon cancer, as you pointed out, but we know from other data sets and the similar behavior of other cancers like breast cancer that this approach is likely to be successful for improving survival in many other cancers. I treat breast cancer, and we're very interested in how to use exercise as a cancer therapeutic in breast cancer. The ongoing BeWell trial will address this question. We don't have those results just yet. But we do know in breast and prostate and several other cancers that exercise does improve quality of life. It improves symptoms. It improves treatment-related symptoms or adverse effects, which can improve adherence to standard cancer therapies. And so it would be unsurprising to see these similar results in terms of a survival benefit with exercise, to see those results recapitulated in other cancers. And that's essentially what we're anticipating. So we need to stay ahead of the evidence, essentially. And I would argue right now we already have ample evidence, which indicates we need to be recommending exercise as part of the cancer treatment plan. For all of our patients with cancer.
Yeah, absolutely. So the data is compelling. You know, exercise isn't just survivorship, it's treatment. So if we know if this works, Neil, why aren't we doing this structured lifestyle therapy as part of our standard oncology clinic? You know, I as a in the blood cancer space where I work in bone marrow transplant, I have sometimes difficulty in finding therapists that I can refer to. You know, their clinics are booked, or you know, it's requiring the patients to stitch together fragmented visits across, you know, the health campus and sometimes off campus. What is your experience like? What if the data is so compelling, why isn't it standard yet?
Well, you know, it's a great question, and I sort of alluded to this with the difficulties with the challenge trial, but I think we can broaden that to clinical practice, and certainly we know that implementing an exercise intervention does face several challenges. I just want to reiterate, though, that as you said, the evidence is so compelling, not just from the challenge trial, but we certainly have observational evidence which indicates that exercise improves both cancer-specific and overall mortality by at least 30 to 40% in breast and several other cancers. And we've seen from several trials that exercise interventions are mechanistically beneficial by improving insulin sensitivity, by improving our overall metabolic health. And we know that cancer survivors have more than a doubling in their risk of developing cardiometabolic disorders and cardiometabolic mortality. So there are many various benefits, which I would bucket into quality of life, improvement of comorbidities, and then now we have evidence showing improvement of cancer-specific survival and cancer-specific outcomes. So why aren't we routinely implementing such a beneficial intervention in clinic? Well, I think some of the challenges have to do with how do we do this in terms of our infrastructure. It does take a different type of staffing to implement an exercise intervention. If a drug trial comes out with these sorts of results, where typically most clinics are typically set up to implement the drug intervention the next day. Whereas with an exercise intervention, staffing would include training the nursing staff, but also having exercise physiologists or other exercise clinicians who can actually implement the exercise intervention. We all know that clinic is a busy, busy space. And so, how do we have the time to add in the exercise counseling? Who does the counseling? This is where we may be able to turn to websites or online support, but frankly, much of what's available to support our patients in terms of lifestyle intervention is either fragmented or not very user-friendly. And so, in terms of digital tools, it's a challenge. It's been a challenge in terms of implementing a digital approach to exercise interventions. And then finally, coordinating across the care teams. We, of course, want to know what our patients are doing, especially if we're recommending, as the oncologist, recommending the exercise intervention. And so sending a patient off to a website to follow an exercise intervention is also something that may not sit well with us because we want to make sure that it's vetted and that it's useful to the patient.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I know that you and I have had patients that have taken advantage of some digital health tools, one of which is Compliment One, which is a new company in this space that does a combination of, well, it's a telehealth type platform that does physical therapy for at least 30 minutes every day, Monday through Friday. It does nutrition counseling and it does stress relief counseling as well, and have stress relief protocols. You and I have shared patient or have had patients using this. I'm wondering if you could share what your experience has been with Compliment One.
Yeah, absolutely. As you've mentioned, I've had patients use the Compliment One platform. We've also run clinical trials looking at the use of the Compliment One platform in our patients with cancer. And I think the key pieces to highlight here are that, as I mentioned earlier, one of the major issues is how do we implement a digital exercise solution or lifestyle solution in a way that actually supports our patients and is effective, but is also scalable and can fit into our clinical infrastructure. Well, I think this is where Complement One has been very useful. Essentially, it is a vetted lifestyle intervention that brings together both the digital platform, but also human trust and that human interaction, because there is daily contact between the patient and licensed clinicians. And this then engenders high adherence rates. And this is another major challenge with exercise interventions, as we've discussed. With Complement One, we see 90% adherence. There is rapid onboarding. So by the time between me recommending an exercise intervention and then patients getting onboarded into the Complement One platform is 24 hours. This is accessible and scalable to many patients because of the digital delivery system. It is accessible to Medicaid, rural, and older adults, and is independent of clinic workflow. And this is really key because it minimizes burden on the clinical staff. This is something that is run independently of our clinic, so we don't need to worry about how or who is delivering the exercise intervention within our staffing. So at a systems level, this has many key implications here, because if we are able to successfully deliver a lifestyle intervention, which we are able to do through Complement One, this has key impacts, certainly on our treatment metrics, fewer dose reductions, fewer unplanned hospitalizations or other treatment modifications, and then, of course, has key implications on quality metrics. We see improved quality metrics and lower total cost of care by allowing a higher adherence to the cancer treatment plan with fewer hospitalizations and fewer adverse effects. Now, what's critical though is that this really bringing in something like Complement One allows us to implement a lifestyle intervention in a way that is part of the cancer treatment plan. And I think that's a theme that we've really been emphasizing, especially with data from the CHALLENGE trial and all of the other data that we've been discussing, is that we can now layer on this additional critical therapeutic layer that complements our traditional pharmacologic treatments for cancer and aligns with a value-based approach to oncology practice.
Yeah, it seems like it's made what the CHALLENGE trial showed. It finally makes it practical. It's a way for us oncologists to prescribe recovery so that it scales outside of our clinic and into the homes or wherever the patient would like to do their recovery. So I'd like to close this up by bringing this back to that case we started off with. So this is that 48-year-old woman with breast cancer. So this was actually a case. She was involved in the Complement One clinical trial, and she was taking it. She was in the Complement One therapy while she was taking endocrine therapy. And within weeks, she had better energy, improved sleep. She regained her muscle tone. She had less neuropathy, and more very importantly, she was also fully adherent to her therapy. And so for her, it wasn't just another app. Because of that health coach presence, every day there was accountability and a human connection. And so Neil, what does all of this mean to you? The CHALLENGE trial, the challenge of being an oncologist in contemporary oncology.
Yeah, well, I think ultimately the data in this space are really evolving quickly to now show proof of concept. And so now we have level one evidence indicating that structured exercise and lifestyle intervention are key tools to extending survival and improving cancer-specific outcomes, in addition to improving quality of life for our patients. So I would argue that we're now in a place where exercise and lifestyle therapy are no longer optional. These are really essential parts of comprehensive cancer care. And as we've been discussing, the challenge is how do we implement a lifestyle intervention? And Complement One really offers us a way to do this that allows for scalability, high adherence, and that human connection with the patient and their health coach. And I think that's really critical because we now have a tool that allows us to deploy a successful intervention, lifestyle therapy, for improving multiple different domains of patient outcomes, including survival. So my challenge to those who are listening to us is how will you integrate what previously was a missing part of treatment, lifestyle therapy? How will you integrate that into your practice, knowing that we now have tools to do so in a successful way?
Great, great challenge. Neil, it was great talking to you today.
Likewise.
Thank you.